Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We're at item P, the Sergeant Shriver Civil Council Act, selection of pilot projects. This is an action item for council. And I have, we have Justice Zeilon and Ms. Bonnie Huff, and we also have Assemblyman Fuhrer here present for this presentation. Welcome. You may proceed.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. It is a true privilege to be here today to bring to you the recommendations that we bring to you. To call the legislation that established this project landmark is truly to underestimate it, and I think we cannot let this moment pass, since Assemblyman Fuhrer is here, without recognizing the truly extraordinary step that this is. With this legislation, California has taken on a role of leadership in a time of huge need in trying to understand why people are without counsel and where people cannot continue to be without counsel. I know that states all around the country are looking to this project in California to see what we learn and how we carry it forward, and it's a moment of great opportunity for us. And I do want to express the thanks of the task force, not just to council, but to Assemblyman Fuhrer for making this possible at this point. As you know, the idea was to provide funding for counsel in civil cases with critical needs, and particularly recognizing that in so many of those cases, one side is represented and the other is not. This is not just an issue of access to justice, however. It is an issue that will have true impact on our courts and their operations. The ability of our courts to meet the needs of litigants effectively and efficiently will be helped by having counsel available in under these projects. The anticipation is there will be fewer continuances. There will, in fact, be fewer hearings, because if people come to their hearings ready to have their issues resolved with the forms properly filled out and the evidence there for the court, then there won't be a need to come back repetitively, which is bad for the litigants and bad for our courts. We think that the innovations and new processes that we will learn about as a result of these projects will redound to the benefits of all courts, whether they are now participating in the projects or not. Our timeline and the reason we are here is that the grants are to start this year. The initial grants will be for a three-year period with a second three-year cycle beginning in the year 2014. In the interim, we are charged to report to the legislature in 2016 with a substantive analysis of what we have learned and what is going forward. This evaluation in itself is a real opportunity for us to undertake some fundamental learning. Much of what we know now, we know anecdotally. We see what works, we see what doesn't work, we make steps to try and make it work better, and we learn that way. This process, however, because there is both funding and opportunity through the grant process to undertake a rigorous analytical process, will allow us to do more than have anecdotal learning, but to have some real tested opportunities and to know when we make innovations in the future what we are basing those innovations on and how to leverage what we have learned from these projects into things that will redound to the benefit of everyone. There are basically four case types for the project, projects pursuant to the legislation: housing-related matters, child custody cases where one side is requesting sole custody, and that is subject to a 20% cap of the total funding, and domestic violence, and then guardianship, conservatorship, and elder abuse. The projects are structured as partnerships between the courts and agencies in the community. Between them, they will contract out for such things as conflicts of interest and additional services that neither the court nor the lead agency can themselves provide. And the court partner's role, an important role for the court partner, is that despite the funding that's being made available and despite the best efforts, providing representation to everyone who needs it is still beyond the grasp of these grants. And so there will continue to be people who do not qualify for counsel under the grant process, and the courts have been tasked with providing extra services for those who remain unrepresented in terms of self-help and other services, and all of the court partners in these proposals have come to the table fully for that. The critical first piece in bringing someone in is the case assessment to be done by the agencies. And this is where really we need to learn the most. What is it that makes someone unable to effectively represent themselves in court? Is it case type or case complexity? Is it the mere fact that the other side is represented? Is it the type of the proceeding? Is it more adversarial than other proceedings? Are there other services that might be available for the client that would allow them to be more effective by themselves? Do they have language and education issues? Do they have disabilities that preclude their effective access? And what is the case? Is it a meritorious case? Is it a case that in the long run is not a case that can be won even with the best of counsel because the facts do not permit it? And importantly, what are the consequences if there is no attorney present? What are the consequences to the individual litigant? And often, what are the consequences to our social structure? Is there going to be more impact on other services needed in the community, other housing services, mental health services, educational services that could be avoided or made more effectively treated if this person was represented by counsel at the time? And so one of the things that we will be looking at in evaluation is what are the potential social services savings by having people represented in an early and effective manner? What did we do? We reached out and we sent out a request to all courts and eligible agencies in California for letters of interest and received a number of letters of interest. In response to that, we clarified our request for proposal and formalized it and sent it out. We received 18 excellent proposals, and I have to say to you that one of the hardest jobs I've had recently was sitting in a room and trying to decide which ones of these 18 proposals we could not recommend to you. Our task force worked very hard on that, and we were all quite sad at the end of the day that many of the proposals could not be brought to you. But the fact is that the requests were for over $25 million worth of grant funds, and we have just a little over $9 million to recommend to you. And so the inevitable happened. But one of the things that we did note in seeing, especially the process between the letters of intent and the response to the request for proposal, was that real conversations took place in communities between courts and the legal services agencies and other agencies in the community. And so that it is our hope that those conversations will bear fruit over the time to come, even if they are not grant recipients, that beginning that process of understanding needs and opportunities will plant a seed that we can water and fertilize even without these funds. And recalling, too, that there is a second round of grants, and hopefully we will be able to bring some of those people back at that time. So here I am today with six proposals that we are recommending to you based on the statutory criteria. We believe that these proposals represent the range of opportunities that the statute sought to have us fill, that they are distributed geographically, by subject matter and by size of court and community in such a way that we can have the maximum amount of learning as well as provide the maximum amount of representation to the people who are involved. And I think at this point I would be happy, and as would Bonnie Huff, who is here with me today and has done invaluable service to this as every other project with which she is involved. We're here to answer any questions you may have. I would refer you to Appendix A, which is the full list of proposals that sought grant funding in this process.
Go ahead, Jim.
I just want to say, as one of the courts in on behalf of my court and on behalf of the Legal Aid Foundation of Santa Barbara County, we're extremely grateful. I do work in, I do have a probate assignment, and we have a guardianship. We got a guardianship grant with both staff assistants in our court for self-represented litigants, as well as funding for the Legal Aid Foundation to represent folks in guardianships. And as many of us know, the guardianship, civil guardianship calendar with self-represented litigants is often the backup system for child welfare in situations where there's not necessarily the level of abuse and neglect that would result in the matter going to child welfare. And you have grandparents and relatives that come in and want to seek a guardianship, or situations where a member of the armed forces is going overseas and temporary guardianship needs to be established. And so this is just a fabulous, fabulous resource for us. I want to thank Assemblyman Furin and also thank Justice Zelon and the committee for this this resource.
Thank you, Jim.
Yes, I just had just a question on process. Were there individual interviews, or was the decision just made based on these applications or proposals?
They were based on the applications. As I understand the contracting process we're subject to, we could not actually have live conversations with the applicants.
And who are the committee members that made the decision? The people that are on Attachment B?
Attachment B. The chair is Justice Earl Johnson, who sadly sends his regrets. He has fallen ill, and I'm filling in for him today.
All these people were involved in reviewing?
Yes.
Making the decision?
We all reviewed. We had individual responsibilities so that we had teams doing an in-depth review on each proposal, and then we discussed them all in full, and we all read all of them.
Just for a point of clarification.
It's tough making these choices. You've got a lot of very able groups here.
Well, it's nice to have good choices to have.
I see.
Justice Zelon, I just wanted to clarify that the recommendation is on page 2 behind tab P, and my count is 7 projects, yes?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Is it 7 recipients and 8 projects?
No, it's 6 recipients and 7 projects,
six
right?
6 recipients and
7.
7.
7.
Projects? 7.
7.
Sorry.
My bad.
7
recipients.
7.
Yes. I just want to make sure what we vote on is.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Good clarification. Thank you.
There was one project where the same legal services entity had projects in 2 counties, and we listed them as one. So that's why my count is off.
Thank you.
I apologize.
No, I was just wanting to make sure that what we vote on is
accurate.
Yes.
That's right.
Page 2.
Thank you. Any more discussion on this worthy, exciting project? And the rec. Assemblymember Fuhrer, please.
I was certainly very much appreciative of the tremendous work of the team charged with assembling these recommendations. Could you just briefly state for us what you thought were some of the defining characteristics that led these projects to stand out among the balance of worthy projects presented to you for review?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. One of the problems is that each of the projects had their own merits, and sometimes when you do comparative work, you end up taking projects that are excellent and not funding them next to projects which offer something a little different. What we were looking for was the involvement of the community partner and the court. And whether we thought it was realistic that they would be able to meet the goals they set, both in terms of number of people who would be represented, the effectiveness of the triage procedures that they were going to be following, and the effectiveness of the other services that would be available to the participants, to the litigants, even if they did not get counsel. We were also looking quite carefully to make sure that we were not displacing any existing resources. We wanted this to be truly something that added on to resources that were already available to litigants and not just become another way of funding already worthy projects. but to bring new projects into the community. We were also trying to make sure that we met all of the goals of the legislation in terms of the types of projects so that we could do the comparative learning we needed to do, and wanted to get experience both in large communities and small communities because the courts face different challenges sometimes in smaller communities than they do in larger communities in terms of legal sources that are available to them and other resources that are available to the litigants. So that was the balance we tried to meet in this process.
May I just say this is probably because of the brevity of the balance of my tenure as a member of the legislature, I will not be here, either here or in the legislature, when the analysis of how effective these programs have been comes forward. And I just wanted to say, for those who are going to be here at that stage, you know, I used to run a public interest law firm. Notwithstanding that experience, where I knew every such program in the state is dramatically underfunded at precise the time when the needs are the most acute, I did not want to author legislation that merely replicated those resources. It just, you know, created more funding for existing legal services programs under the models that they currently perform services. Because this is an anomaly in an era when we've been slashing almost everything of consequence in the budget. We added this program at the same time, so there has to be something very distinctive about this. And among my colleagues in the legislature, when discussing this, both in public hearings and privately, I do want to say to the council that I emphasized a key point that Justice Elon referred to, and that is these projects need to be demonstrating that providing counsel is more efficient and can save money in the system. It is important, obviously, for many other fundamental reasons that all of us care about. But in terms of garnering in the future bipartisan support for continuing such a project, the cost effectiveness of these models needs to be a very important criterion in evaluating success. If we can show that this is both cost effective and obviously so fundamental to what it means to have a just society, then this project will continue and grow. And I will say that if we only demonstrate that more justice was done, that may not be sufficient in a continuing era of scarce resources to continue the program. So I thoroughly appreciate, you know, I did weigh in with the leadership of the committee about the importance of these points as the process was moving forward. Got to be new, innovative demonstrations of cost effectiveness as well as enhanced justice in each of the communities in which the projects would be implemented. And I'm really pleased to see these today. So thanks very much. And when this comes back, be rigorous and be very supportive, please.
And let me assure both the Assemblyman and the Council that the next project of our committee is to finalize the evaluation process, that we take that part of our role extremely seriously because for the very reasons that you just mentioned, and because if we are to learn from this and to be able to use it as a way to provide additional resources in the future, that evaluation has got to be right, and we are very aware of that and very committed to that.
And actually, Madam Chief Justice, if I could just say one more quick thing,
yes.
And that is that once the project had made its way through the legislative process, and while this committee process was pending, I did go to Washington and speak to key legislators and officials in the administration about the possibility of infusing federal resources into this and similar programs across the country. Obviously, things have changed on Capitol Hill since those conversations took place. But I can tell you there are legislators, I can think of one in particular, who would be very interested in seeing this truly as a potential model for the nation on moving in this direction. And there are officials in the Obama administration who have spoken on the sort of lecture circuit about the significance of a civil Gideon project nationally. So I hope we can literally see this for the moment it is, a potential for California to define for the whole country what true justice can be for those who don't have resources but are facing critical problems in the process. I say that with great seriousness here, that this really is something that can be a catalyst for a national change if we do it right. So, thank you.
Thank you, Assemblyman Fuhrer. Any other comments?
Just Kim, one quick one. I know we're short on time, but I did want to say that as one of the applicants that was not successful, I don't want you to feel like decision in any way impacts the amazing conversation that was started as a result of the grant itself. So in those communities where they didn't get money, what they got was a lot of opportunity to sit down with those partners and try to figure out different ways to do things that actually some of which are not dependent on money. So in my community in particular, we're going to be able to implement some of the things that, you know, perhaps not as robustly as we would have had we gotten money. But certainly we'll be able to move forward with some of the great ideas that came out of that conversation. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Judge Pines?
Yeah, can I just go back to what the assembly member was saying? You said it's important to demonstrate the cost effectiveness and cost savings. I gather this is not necessarily to the litigants, but to the system.
Correct.
That you're talking about.
Right.
So it's going to be hard to measure this, but you're talking about fewer appearances, for example, less continuances of those kind of measurements.
It may be hard to quantify in some instances, but even through surveys of judges, the increased efficiency of the proceedings over which they preside, and I don't know that it's going to be possible as an evaluator to fully quantify in dollars and cents that efficiency, but we all know that when there's a pro per litigant who appears before one, we know the point, right? And so it is that kind of savings in the system, among others. Judge Pines, I'm glad you said this. Yes, this is not about cost effectiveness from a litigant standpoint. This is about cost effectiveness from the standpoint of the administration of justice. But parenthetically, there could be other savings that could be identified as well in terms of social services cost reductions and other kinds of expenditures that are currently being provided to folks who may not need them if they were effectively represented in the course of, say, a housing dispute or of a benefits matter. So, thanks.
Thank you. Judge O'Malley, then Judge Waters.
And I would ask the committee in order to be able to somehow capture that information about the efficiencies, and I do believe that this would make these cases much more efficient in the system, that we somehow can set up a system with the CEOs of the courts or the courts that are handling these matters to track these cases as they go through, and then we can compare them to those cases that did not receive that sort of help, and we can capture that information.
No desire to cut off discussion at all, but I'd like to move that we adopt the recommendations of the Implementation Committee.
Thank you. And before we do that, I do want to once again thank Assemblyman Fuhrer for the vision and the leadership and really the great promise that this holds for the future of California litigants, but also for the courts.
Second.
By Judge O'Malley. All in favor of granting of the recommendation on page 2 of the 7 project?
Aye.
Any opposition? No. Matter passes. Thank you very much for your hard work.
Yes.
This is exciting.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.